Well, good morning, everybody. It's good to see you this morning. Thank you for putting the sun out for me today in South Woodham Ferris. I got very wet yesterday watching my football team lose again. There we go. Miserable afternoon in all sorts of ways, but we'll survive. So, yeah, a little while ago, we decided it might be quite good to follow some kind of preaching plan. So we're looking together at Mark's Gospel. I think some people have, some people haven't, but when you get me, you'll get a bit of Mark, and that's what you get today. And quite a well-known passage this morning where we find Jesus beginning to gather around him those that would be his friends. Significant that Jesus felt he wanted friends. That's a subject in itself. Not the one I want to speak about today. But of course, these people were to be more than friends. They were to be followers, people whose lives were shaped by what they saw, by what they heard. So that when Jesus himself no longer was physically present to do the works of God, these people, these men, would be in a position to do so. And I think it's significant, at least I choose to suggest it's significant, that the first people he chose to invite to fulfill this significant role were fishermen. And I suggest it's significant because of what Jesus immediately says about activity that was to be at the heart of what they were to be and of what they were to do. And of course, that is to become fishers of men, fishers of people, if we're being a little bit more politically correct and if we're using the language we like to today. But the point is that when we think about discipleship, because that's what these people were defined as being, we have to incorporate within our thinking about what that means, that there needs to be a dimension of our lives that is focused very intentionally upon catching other people and drawing them to share our faith and, like us, to begin to follow Jesus. Fishermen that went out without any real intention of catching fish probably wouldn't do so. There's quite a lot of technology today, isn't there, around tracking the movement of shoals and all the rest of it. If you want to catch fish, you need to be intentional. And so today I want to speak about this whole business of catching fish, of catching people, of drawing them to love Christ and to follow Christ in the way that we ourselves do. I suggest the truth is that any notion of Christian discipleship that has forgotten that an essential dimension of that discipleship is evangelism, winning others, is not New Testament discipleship. For it's the very heart and the core of what it means to follow Jesus. Some of us maybe throw up our hands in horror, at least mentally, because we hate talking about our faith, because for all sorts of reasons we're nervous that we might be asked questions we can't answer. We're not sure that perhaps our witness is all that it ought to be. And so sometimes, instead of speaking, we can be silent. I recognize that not all of us are going to be gifted evangelists with a very clear capacity to make spiritual truth straightforward, simple, with a boldness that means that when we have conversations, we don't hesitate, but we think, here's an opportunity to speak about Jesus and my faith. I recognize that we're not all going to be as gifted at that. But one way or another, we do need to be intentional about being those that win others for Christ. Some of you know that I'm a bit of a fan of a guy called Bill Hybels. And that's in spite of the fact that recently, sadly, he's got himself in some trouble, it would seem. But over the years, things that he has taught have become very much a part of the kind of things that I have then passed on and taught. And years ago, I came across a book called Becoming a Contagious Christian. Has anybody else come across that book? You have, Debbie. Did you read it or just shove it on the shelf? Or okay. Okay. So you've come across it. Yeah. I remember the first time I taught it in Braintree. Well, the only time I taught it in Braintree. I haven't been there long enough to do it more than once. Somebody kind of found fault with the title. I thought being contagious was a bad thing. You know, the whole notion of infection and the rest of it. And I thought, well, how sad that we kind of find fault with a word that appears in a title rather than understanding the idea of passing on in a very natural way the faith that we share. But Hybels, in his book, essentially unpacks an equation, which I'm going to write on the board, which is why I wanted it this morning. Simultaneous equations were never my greatest love. In fact, as I look back upon my childhood, I can remember sitting in my bedroom crying because I couldn't do my homework. Anybody else struggle with simultaneous equations? I just couldn't get it. I don't know what that says about me. But Hybels suggests that effective evangelism demands HP plus CP plus CC equals MI. Well, that's illuminating, isn't it? Sure. Is that better? Yes? And I'll tell you what this one is, then we'll work through the others. This one is maximum impact. In other words, in order to be effective fishers of men, to have maximum impact, these things need to be true of us. Any ideas what HP stands for? It's not source. Not source, so it's not be saucy. Any ideas what HP stands for?
Healthy prayer.
Healthy prayer. Well, that's an excellent suggestion. Was that you, Hazel, said that? And prayer, of course, needs to undergird the whole deal, or we won't get very far. It means high potency. High potency. So if you drive a sports car with a highly potent engine, it means powerful. The first thing, therefore, Hybels suggests is that we need to have a powerful Christian life. What really does that mean? I guess what he's saying is that we've no chance of making an impact. I'm going to trip over this in a minute. We've no chance of making an impact unless we live a Christian life. And sometimes it's a little bit too easy, isn't it, to be one thing on a Sunday in a church and another thing for the rest of the week. There isn't always that consistency, is there, in our lives that we really know there ought to be. So the only person who's going to be an effective fisher of men is the person who doesn't just speak about being a Christian, but lives like being a Christian. I don't know whether you would agree with me, but one of the things that I've heard over the years as an objection to anything I might say about my faith is that too many Christians are hypocrites. You heard that over the years? Now, I think actually it's often just an excuse that's put out there to resist taking seriously what we have to say. But sadly, too often, there's too much truth, isn't there, in what people say to us at that level. Sadly, the media are much more content to speak about Christians that fail than Christians that do the right thing. And so for lots of reasons, I think that hypocrisy is a charge that we have to hear. And that's what Hybels is talking about, that we need to be people that demonstrate what it really means to be a follower of Jesus. Not just going to church on Sundays, but living the life all week long. I'm reading quite a difficult book at the moment called On the Verge. It's a book all about the fact that within our nation today, we can no longer presume very much Christian knowledge at all. They speak about this being a post-Christian society. In other words, that what once could be presumed can no longer be presumed. And some of you may have picked up in the news over the last 10 days, I would guess, that for the first time ever, censuses are showing that the majority of the population in our country no longer declare themselves to be religious. Anybody pick that up? I mean, that should shock us. That 52% of people answering the questionnaires, fulfilling the polling, declared themselves to be not religious. It's the first time ever. And this book, On the Verge, is a book designed to talk about what the church needs to become in order to step beyond its traditional patterns of doing to embrace ways that connect with people that are far, far away. And I was interested that as I read the book, that the thing that is suggested to be the most important thing of all is that the church rediscovers how to make disciples. It suggests that many of our churches attract consumers, religious consumers, who come and they come because they get something that does them some good, but then when they leave, it makes no real impact upon the lives they live. Religious consumers. And what the book argues is that we need to get back to an understanding that we're to produce not consumers, but disciples. People who carry their faith into their working world, into the streets where they live, the shops where they shop, and in those contexts, live out the Christian life. And so here's a quote from the book: discipleship and disciple making are the strategic missional activities in our time. In other words, that the most important thing for the church to do is to make disciples today, because those disciples will be those that want to win and are able to win others for Christ. And here's a quote that disturbed me and attracted me all at the same time. We need to be imitators of Christ, not merely his fan club. Interesting, isn't it? It's easy sometimes to gather amongst a great crowd of people and sing exciting songs.
I enjoy doing that. I'm not knocking it. But I'm not a fan of Jesus. I'm meant to be a follower of Jesus. And there's a distinction, isn't there? No? There is, isn't there? Okay, so what does high potency look like in practice? Hybels talks about three things. The first, in a sense, we've already spoken about authenticity. Authenticity. That we be real Christians and not pretend Christians. It's this hypocrisy agenda. So we don't need to say anything more about that. The only thing I would say is that, in my experience, although most people are not Christians, they know what Christians are meant to be. True, isn't it? And I'm a bit embarrassed to share this, but recently I was on holiday with my brother and my sister-in-law, and I said something which was totally out of character. It really was out of character. And I shouldn't have said it. It just kind of came out. Sometimes things do, don't they? And you think, oh, crumbs, I shouldn't have said that. And Julian looked at me, my brother, he looked at me and said, I'm shocked. Baptist ministers shouldn't say that. And he was right. He was right. Julian has no time for Christianity. He's a scientist. And that's his excuse. He gets quite aggressive if we have conversations of any real depth about spiritual things. But he knows what a Baptist minister should be like. And people know what Christians are meant to do. That's why when you do something like work with the homeless, you find there's such approval for what you do. Because everybody knows that Christians are meant to care. That's the first thing. Second thing, and it's linked with with what I've just said about the homeless, I guess, that we need to be compassionate people. We need to be people that in real ways love other people, even the people at the bottom of the pile. Any of you come across a man called Philip Yancey? Debbie? Philip Yancey? Which book you come across? What's So Amazing About Grace? That's normally the book people come across. Your one, Sally? Yeah. He reports a story that ought to disturb us. It's about a friend who worked with the people at the bottom of the social pile. I can't remember which American city it was. It doesn't matter. It may have been New York. Doesn't matter at all. But he worked with people at the bottom of the social pile in one of the great American cities. And he came across this prostitute who was also a drug addict, who had embraced the grossest sin in order to feed this habit. And although she'd lived a life of a very degraded type for many years, somehow with this friend of Yancey's, she broke down and demonstrated just how awful she felt about herself. Yancey's friend turns round and he says, have you been to the church? She turned round and said, church? Why would I ever go to church? I already feel wretched about myself. They'd only make me feel worse. You remember that illustration, those that have read the book? Because the fact of the matter is that sometimes we can be quicker to condemn and to find fault
than to show compassion to broken people, can't we? I'm going back this evening to do, I suppose, we call it Mosaic. It's basically a small house group. We run twice a month at the church on a Sunday evening for people who want something different. And we're talking tonight about being the light of the world. The church should be the light of the world. And one of the things we're going to talk about is the way in which actually sometimes we define Christianity in terms of what we don't do. So we don't take drugs, we don't watch porn, etc., etc. We have these kind of we don't definitions about what Christianity is. And the trouble is, when that's how we define Christianity, we're quick to find fault with those who do those things, you see. And so rather than being a light that attracts, we can be a searchlight that exposes their sinfulness and makes them feel worse, like the prostitute in Yance's story. And what we need to do is to begin to understand that we need to define and demonstrate a Christianity that is not negative, you mustn't do this, but that is positive in the sense that it embraces people even in their sinful brokenness and loves them. You're seeing the distinction, I hope, that I'm making. So the second thing is compassion. Real compassion that touches broken, sinful people. Not with condemnation, but with grace, you see. Isn't that what Jesus did with the woman caught in adultery? You remember the story well, don't you? The religious types came with their stones ready to exact retribution for this sin that she'd been caught in. Important question, where was the guy? But that's another question. It was the woman that was dragged before Jesus, wasn't it? And Jesus turns around and he says, well, let him without sin. Well, you chuck the first stone then. And they all melt away. We need to remember that there, but for the grace of God, go I. Don't we? We need to be more compassionate. Thirdly, he talks about sacrifice. I always spell that wrong, but hopefully I've done it right this time. Two A's, isn't it?
No.
Is it two I's? Oh. I'm not going to change it. We live in a very self-centered world, don't we? And that's the truth. Don't you struggle? I struggle with it. I'm a Baptist pastor, and I struggle with being selfish. I'm sure you do. We all do. We live in a society which drives personal agendas and encourages the satisfaction of personal ambition. Maybe that's why David Cameron once talked about the big society, whatever he meant. We need to rediscover community, you see. And Hybels argues, I think rightly so, that in a self-centered, selfish world, people that are prepared to make sacrifices for the sake of others make an impact. They make an impact. So the first thing is HP. Highly potent, authentic, compassionate, sacrificial, because those are things that people need to see. Not just hear about, but see. Okay, what about CP? What do we think CP is? Close proximity. You don't mind me doing it like this morning, do you? Proxim. Doesn't seem too much like a classroom, I hope. I hope it's helpful. But I didn't produce a sheet, and then you can remember things better. Close proximity. Just to prove I'm a good Baptist, Tell Nick, please. Just to prove I'm a good Baptist, some years ago, the Baptist Union of Great Britain, no less, produced a report called Voices from the Baptistry. Don't know whether anybody ever came across it. Sally, you must have read that. Nighttime reading. It was fascinating piece of research that they'd done over the course of a year, questioning everybody that they could about the reasons why they'd been baptised in the previous 12 months. Number of questions were asked. One of the key questions was, as you look back upon this baptismal commitment, what were the biggest influences upon you that you think led you to this point of commitment to Christ? Key question. The most popular answer, far and away above any other answer, was either I was influenced by a family member who was a follower of Jesus, or a friend who was a follower of Jesus. These, most people suggested in the poll, were the key influences that meant that they had become committed Christians. Just think for a minute about why you became a committed Christian. Just cast your mind back, if it's a way back or it's newer, do the same thing. How many of you, if I asked you, I'm going to ask you to do this. How many of you root your baptismal commitment into some personal relationship of significant influence? That's the majority, isn't it? That's the majority. It's true for me. You see, friendship evangelism, close proximity, close to people. Friendship evangelism is far and away the most effective way of winning others for Christ. David Watson wrote a book before he died, I Believe in Evangelism, that I still think is one of the best books that's ever been written, actually. It's old because David Watson, I guess, died late 80s, did he? Late 80s? But he quotes Leighton Ford. Listen to what Leighton Ford writes in a book that was called The Christian Persuader. Christian isolationism has been a constant barrier to evangelism. Many Christians have been so afraid of being contaminated by worldliness that they have avoided any social contacts with unconverted persons. As a result, they have no natural bridges for evangelism. What witnessing they do is usually artificial and forced, rather than the spontaneous outgrowth of genuine friendship. Part of Jesus' attractiveness, which drew secular people like a magnet, was his wonderful love of life, his natural, appealing friendliness. Now, I won't embarrass you, but if I introduced you to my own church congregation, you would find that there are too many of them have no non-Christian friends, actually. They may have acquaintances, but in terms of real friends that don't share their faith, very few. And so the significant thing is, as an example of that, is that over the last 4 years, when Denise and I have been at Braintree Baptist Church, the people that have been catching fish have been those that have joined the church freshly themselves, who have themselves been converted to Christ, because they have a network of friendships that they can naturally speak about Jesus within. So I'm not going to embarrass you, but just think for a minute. Do you have people that you could genuinely say are non-Christian friends? Well, some of you are nodding. You're very brave to do that, but I'm not going to embarrass, but lots of people aren't. But some of us need to make time to make friends, non-Christian friends. Dare I say it? Maybe it means we attend less meetings at the church. And we make some time to join a group, a club, a society, a charity. Whereas Christians, we belong alongside others and we discover that we begin to generate faith-sharing opportunities. Close proximity. What about CC? Carbon copy 2? No. Any ideas? What else is needed for effective evangelism? Living the life, non-Christian friends, real friends. What else do you need to do? If you want to... What? Christ-centered. Need to be Christ-centered. That's great, Pete. That wasn't it, though. No, you do need commitment. It's clear communication. Clear communication. Oh, my writing's getting much worse. Clear communication. Francis of Assisi, can't say that quickly, can you? Francis of Assisi is meant to have said, go into all the world and preach the gospel and use words if you have to. You've heard that before? Now, I'm not sure he ever said it. I can't prove that. But if he said it, he's wrong. Why is he wrong? Because the Bible says words are important. Romans chapter 10. Romans chapter 10, here we go. How then can people call on the one they have not believed in? And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? I'm not talking about standing up on a soapbox outside Asda's on Saturday mornings. But there needs to be an ability to communicate what I believe, why I believe it, and why it's important. Doesn't there? I remember that in our first church in Buckinghamshire, we had this... We had a number of small groups, a bit like you do. And there was one lady who wanted to join a group. She wasn't yet a Christian, but she wanted to join one of our groups. So we chose one that we thought would be good for her, people about her age in close vicinity, and she joined it. And I remember the day, because I'd gone to visit the groups. I used to go and visit them occasionally. And she happened to pipe up that night, what do I have to do to become a Christian? And I just sat and watched people struggling to answer the question. They were over complex, really. Well, of all we know about the Bible, what bits do we need to tell her to answer this question? Again, I'm not going to embarrass you. But if you got asked that question, would you know what to say? Would you know what to say? If not, you need to learn, guys. You need to learn. And we need to do more than provide the information. God so loved the world that he gave his only son. I mean, there's a place to begin if you want to. We need to help people to cross the line. Make it personal. Ask questions like, so do you want to commit yourself to Christ? Don't leave the information hanging there. But we need to help them do something with it. And we're not good at that. Bill Hybels gives an illustration of a guy in his church who lost his job. So he introduced him to somebody else in his church who was looking for someone to sell cars, actually. And he made the introduction. The guy got employed, went to work for the other church member. Some months later, Hybels says to the guy, how's he working out? And the guy turns around and says, this is American phraseology, I had to let him go. It's a nice way of saying I fired him, isn't it, in America to speak. And Hybels was very, he said, oh, I'm sorry if I gave you a lousy recommendation. You know, how did he let you down? Was he consistently late to work? Did he steal from you? Or, you know, and the guy says, none of that. He was great, but he just couldn't make a sale. He couldn't sell a car. And I needed somebody who could sell cars. Clear communication needs to be about more than providing information. It needs to persuade people and show people how they can do this. So what does it take to fish for men? Living the Christian life, not just speaking about it. Having non-Christian friends so that you can naturally share with them what you believe to be important. And being able to communicate what you believe, why you believe it, and how they can act upon the things you're sharing.